"Your queen," Hades said. Minthi's jaw tensed.
"When were you going to tell me?"
"You act as if I owe you an explanation."
"Don't you? We were lovers."
"For a night, Minthi, nothing more." She stared at him, eyes glistening.
"Is it because she is a goddess?"
"If you are asking me why not you, it was never you, Minthi." The words were harsh, but they were true, and he hoped they hit home. He would see that she respected Persephone as her queen, or he would dismiss her. The nymph lingered for a few seconds longer before turning on her heels and running from the stables.
"I'm disappointed in you," Hecate said. The two stood in the shadows outside Dolphin and Company Shipbuilding. It was a company owned by Poseidon, and because it was owned by a god, it had the monopoly on ship and boat building in New Greece. It helped that Poseidon claimed his ships were unsinkable, a promise many believed because he was god of the sea. His dockyards spanned for miles, employing thousands of mortals and immortals who built yachts, cargo ships, and wartime vessels, the latter being a type of ship Zeus had ordered Poseidon to cease building after the Great War. Hades doubted Poseidon had listened. It was here where Sisyphus had agreed to meet Poseidon under the guise that the god would help him escape Hades' wrath, a ruse that was not implausible. Hades did not trust Poseidon. He was well aware that the god had fulfilled his part of the bargain, luring Sisyphus. Beyond that, he was not obligated to help Hades capture the mortal. "Why this time?" he asked, responding to Hecate's earlier comment. "I told you I wanted to be present when you told Minthi you were to be married."
Hades glanced at the goddess, raising a brow. She was cloaked in black velvet, as was her nature when she came to the upper world. She preferred to blend with the darkness. He had asked her to accompany him on this trip to handle the spindle. Ilias had not been able to track how Poseidon had come into possession of it, so Hecate would have to perform a trace on the object. That was the problem with relics. There was so much to clean up in their aftermath. "How do you know I told her?"
"Because she has vented to half the staff about it," Hecate said, "though it has not had the effect she desired."
"What does that mean?"
"She hoped they would be just as affronted, but I think the staff are hopeful."
"Hopeful?"
"They want Persephone much as you do, Hades," Hecate said, a little mischievously.
"Hmm," Hades grunted. It was true that he wanted her. But after the article she had written, he was not certain she wanted him, or ever would. Still, he knew she had made an impression on his souls. After she watered her garden, she spent hours with them. She had learned many of their names and spent time with them, going for walks or taking tea, even cleaning. She played with the children and brought them gifts. Even his dogs tended to follow her, even if he promised playtime. She had won their favor in no time, and he had yet to win hers. Hades focused on the smell of Poseidon's magic, salt and sand and hot sun, as his brother appeared before them. He was fully dressed this time in a pink suit with black lapels and a white pocket square. Despite using a mortal glamour, he had kept his crown, the gold spires losing their luster amid his honeyed hair. Hades wondered if he wore it as a show of power to remind him that they were in his territory.
"I see you brought your witch," Poseidon said, aqua eyes sliding to Hecate.
It was not Hecate Poseidon disliked so much as her relationship with Zeus. Hecate, on the other hand, hated Poseidon merely for being arrogant. As soon as the god spoke, Hecate's eyes narrowed, and the leg of his trousers caught fire.
"Motherfucker!"
he roared as he hopped about, trying to put out Hecate's mystic fire. Hades smirked at his brother's pain.
"Hecate is far older than us, Poseidon," Hades called over his brother's screams. We must respect our elders.
Careful, Hades. I am not above setting you aflame, the goddess of magic replied.
And I am not above incinerating your nightshade.
They smiled at each other.
If you two are finished flirting, Poseidon shouted, I should remind you that my fucking leg is on fire.
Oh, I haven't forgotten. Hecate's eyes flashed as she returned her gaze to Poseidon, which caused the god to go still. Whatever he saw in her eyes caused him more fear than the fire claiming his leg. Finally, she dismissed the magic. Poseidon brushed at his pant leg, hands shaking as he assessed the damage. The cloth was blackened and curled, parts of it melted into his bubbling skin. He glared at Hecate, and she shrugged a shoulder. You called me a witch, she said.
You are a witch, Hades reminded her.
It was the way he said it, like it was an insult. Perhaps next time he'll remember the power behind the word. Poseidon straightened, fists curled at his sides. Hades sensed his rage churning beneath the surface, fierce like a deadly storm. He was not sure what the god intended to do next. Perhaps he wished to war with Hecate, which would spell disaster for him, his business, and the goal of this meeting. Where is the mortal? Hades asked. Poseidon's eyes shifted to his, and Hades felt his hate. Usually, his brother's intense emotion left him smiling, but today he felt dread. Poseidon had a number of reasons to fuck this up. Favor or not, Hades had embarrassed him in front of his people and his wife, and while Poseidon had earned Hecate's wrath, there was only so much the god of the sea would endure before he took his revenge. Everyone had a breaking point, and Poseidon had done well to stay composed this long. He wondered what sort of magic Amphitrite had worked upon him. He will arrive soon, Poseidon indicated to a watchtower that overlooked his shipyard. Wait there. The two did as he instructed and teleported to the lookout. The box was small, and Hades and Hecate stood shoulder to shoulder as they peered out over the yard. This particular security station overlooked the entrance and the main office. In the distance, a series of lights illuminated hundreds of ships in various states of construction. Hades thought the view was beautiful in its own way. He is even more unpleasant than I remember, Hecate muttered. You know he can hear you, Hades reminded her. I hope so. Hades smirked, and then his gaze shifted to the entrance of the shipyard. Something rippled in the air. Magic, but not Poseidon's or Hecate's. He tensed and saw Sisyphus walk into view. The mortal's thick, broad frame was unmistakable. As he approached Poseidon's office, the god walked out to meet him. That is not a mortal, Hecate said. It was at that moment that Thanatos appeared in a billow of black smoke, his great wings spread wide, and he wielded a long blade he used to slide through Sisyphus's body. But the mortal disintegrated into bits of rock and clay. Poseidon, Hades growled. Sisyphus's laugh echoed from every direction, and Hades looked at Hecate. Someone has given the mortal magic, the goddess said.
You might be all-powerful, but I can guess your tricks, Lord Hades.
Hades ground his teeth and called upon his magic, sending his shadows searching for the mortal in the darkness. He would draw the man out like poison from a wound.
Ah!
As soon as Sisyphus screamed, Hades teleported, finding him atop the yard's wide stone wall. Hello, mortal. His foot shot out, kicking Sisyphus in the stomach. He fell from the wall onto his back in the middle of the yard. Hades followed, landing on his feet, and took a few deliberate strides toward him, spires protruding from his fingertips. He would sink them so far into Sisyphus's chest he'd puncture his heart. The mortal groaned and rolled onto his back, eyes widening as Hades approached. He pushed himself onto his elbows, his feet sliding against the dirt as he tried to crawl away. Again, Hades felt that same shift in the air. It was magic of some kind, but it was not divine. "Hades, down!" Hecate commanded. Her voice was near, but he could not see her. He obeyed, hitting the ground just as the wall behind him exploded. Debris flew, hitting Hades back as he crouched on the ground. The impact was harsh, and he groaned. He might heal easily, but that did not mean he could not feel pain. Somewhere in the distance, Poseidon laughed.
"You had better run, mortal, unless you wish to find yourself at the end of Hades' claws."
Hades looked up, and through the curling smoke, he saw Sisyphus climb to his feet. He was covered in dust, and his head was bleeding.
"No," Hades growled.
With his magic working to heal him fast, he had no time to teleport. Instead, he withdrew the small box Hephaestus had made and tossed it after the mortal. As he did, Thanatos moved to chase Sisyphus, the god blocking Hades' aim. The box fell at Thanatos's feet, and the chains unfurled, trapping the god of death in heavy manacles. Sisyphus raced toward the gaping opening in Poseidon's wall, and Hades growled as he got to his feet and followed. But when he made it outside, the mortal was gone and the street quiet. A mortal could not have fled that fast. He'd had help.
"Magic," Hecate said, appearing beside him. "The air smells of it. If I had to guess, a portal."
Hades stood for a few moments in silence, glaring at the space where Sisyphus once stood before returning to the yard. Poseidon stood near his office, large arms crossed over his chest, a smug expression on his face.
"What's the matter, brother? Evening not go quite as planned?"
Hades cast his arm out, and the spires that protruded from the tips of his fingers shot toward Poseidon like bullets. The god summoned a wall of magic, and the spikes halted inches from his face. Hades turned his attention to Thanatos, whose lithe body bowed beneath the weight of Hephaestus's chains. Hecate stood aside, studying him, the corners of her lips turned up.
"Chains of truth, Hades?" she asked, raising a brow. "Thanatos, what do you think of Hades' hair?"
The god of death's eyes widened in fear, and when he spoke, it was like the words had been torn from his throat.
"It's a mess. A complete contradiction to his pristine appearance."
Hecate's smile widened, and Hades glared at the two. "Eleftheros ton," he said, and as Thanatos was released from the chains, he collapsed to his knees. Hecate helped him to his feet.
"I'm so sorry, my lord."
Hades said nothing, his hand clenched around the box, edges digging into his palm. He looked at Hecate.
"What was the creature that came in place of Sisyphus?" he asked.
"It was a golem," Hecate said.
A golem was a creation made of clay and animated with magic. It could take on any form, so long as the potion included a piece of the person it was to imitate.
"Sisyphus had help creating that creature," Hades said. "Can you trace the magic?"
"Of course I can trace the magic," Hecate said. She seemed offended he would even ask.
"Can you ask nicely?"
At that moment, his phone rang. Before Persephone, he had hardly used it, but it was that thought that had him drawing it out of his pocket to answer before he responded to Hecate.
"Yes?"
he hissed as he answered his phone.
"Hades?"
Aphrodite purred his name. Hades sighed, frustrated.
"What do you want, Aphrodite?"
If she was calling to goad him, he would torture Basil tonight. He swore it.
"I just thought you might like to know your goddess has come to my club for a visit."
Something possessive reared its head at the mention of his goddess. It was a dark feeling, and it came out of his chest, a monster ready to fight, to protect, to claim.
"A visit?"
"Yes."
Aphrodite's voice was breathy.
she arrived with Adonis.
Forget fighting and protecting and claiming. That monster in his chest wanted blood.
I hope you hurry, she said. He seems smitten.
Chapter 16. A Battle for Control. Hades appeared outside La Rose. Like all clubs owned by gods, Aphrodite's was a popular hangout in New Athens. While many mortals came to him looking for love, just as many flocked here, believing that a sip of her drinks or a spray from her infamous pink mist would mean an end to their search for a soulmate. There was no such thing, of course. No drink or mist that could lead another to their soulmate. That was up to the fates. Aphrodite was waiting for him. She wore a silky, light pink dress with a cowl neckline. She looked pale in the light outside her club, her cheeks and lips flushed.
Do not cause a scene, Hades, Aphrodite said.
Says the goddess who started a war over an apple, Hades snapped. Where is she?
The goddess of love glared, her frustration with Hades palpable.
Persephone, Aphrodite.
She is dancing.
Dancing, he thought. With Adonis?
His jaw tightened, and he bared his teeth as he stepped past the goddess, summoning two ogres, Adrian and Ezio, to flank him.
Hades!
Aphrodite's voice was sharp, the tone of a woman who had fought and killed on the battlefield. Hades paused, but did not turn to look at the goddess.
You will not hurt him!
Her voice shook as she spoke. He said nothing and stepped into the darkness of the club, straightening his jacket and smoothing his hair.
I'm an idiot,
he scolded himself. He called up his glamour so that he would be invisible as he came to the edge of the dance floor, where people moved in a hypnotic tangle of limbs. Overhead, lights flashed, and pink mist hung heavy in the air. The smell of roses and sweat clung to his skin, and somewhere in this chaos was Persephone. With Adonis. He gritted his teeth. Had he not warned her to stay away from the mortal? Hades glanced at Adrian and Ezio, and the ogres branched off to the left and right, while he took the middle. Mortals made space for him. Unaware, he walked among them. He scanned faces, searching for Persephone's familiar features. His chest felt tight, and his breaths grew shallow as he looked for her, thinking of all the sin he had seen upon Adonis's soul. He was a predator and a liar. Were they somewhere in the shadows together? Was he touching her the way Hades longed to touch her? The thought made him feel violent. And then he found her in Adonis's arms, and everything seemed to move in slow motion. He realized he had never really known rage. This was primal. It jolted his whole body and made him quiver. He wanted to roar, to strike fear in each and every person in this room, just so they would cease their unabashed revelry. Adonis's hand cupped her head, fingers twining in her glossy hair, and his lips were pressed against hers so hard his nose was bent. But it was Persephone's body language he watched. The way she pushed against the mortal's chest, the closer he tried to bring her, the way she clamped her lips together, refusing to partake of his, the tear that slipped down her cheek the longer he held her there. This is torture, Hades thought. All of a sudden, everything resumed its usual speed. Adrian and Ezio appeared, each fixing a hand on Adonis's shoulder and yanked him away from Persephone. Hades moved toward her, unsure of what he intended to do, but wanting to be near her, to comfort her. The goddess turned toward him as she wiped her mouth, her eyes meeting his.
Hades!
She breathed his name, and the sound made him shiver. He was further surprised when she threw her arms around his waist and buried her head in his chest. For a moment, he was frozen. Had he not wished to offer her comfort? Why was he suddenly unable to move? Slowly, he pressed a hand to her back, the other twining with her hair,
hating that Adonis's fingers had experienced the feel of her. He held her for a moment and wanted to hold her longer, but they needed to leave this place, so he drew his finger beneath her chin, tilting her head until her eyes met his.
"Are you well?"
She shook her head. Hades gritted his teeth, quashing the urge to find Adonis and grind him into ash.
"Let's go."
He drew her against him and guided her toward the exit. Like before, the crowd parted, but this time it was because they could see him. He had dropped his invisibility when he approached Persephone and had not bothered to glamour up again. They stilled and stared while the music blared.
"Hades."
"They will not remember this," Hades assured, knowing her anxiety would rise at the thought of being seen together like this in public. The media would descend, the headlines would speculate. She would become the story, not the storyteller. As much as she did not want that to happen, Hades did not either, and as they came to the edge of the crowd, his magic rippled out, stealing memories and returning the floor to its blissful chaos. Then Persephone tried to bolt.
"Lexa!"
She moved too fast and swayed. Hades wasn't certain if she tripped or if she had too much to drink. Either way, he bent to gather her into his arms, unwilling to risk having to chase after her.
"I will ensure she gets home safe," he promised.
He watched her face, seeing her close her eyes tight and frowned.
"Persephone?"
"Hmm?"
Her voice vibrated, her breath teased his lips, carrying the scent of wine and something metallic he could not quite place.
"What's wrong?"
"Dizzy,"
she whispered. He didn't speak, but left the building. If he stayed any longer, he would burn it to the ground and incur the wrath of Aphrodite, something he might welcome to free himself of this rage. Outside, the air was cool, and Persephone started to shiver, burrowing closer to his chest. She took a deep breath.
"You smell good."
Her small hands curled into his jacket, and he chuckled at her lack of inhibition, holding her tighter as he ducked into the back of his limo. He considered keeping her cradled against him until they arrived at Nevernight, but decided against it. She had been accosted on the floor of LaRose, and probably wanted distance. Plus, she was cold. He helped her into the seat beside him and adjusted the controls so the heat would warm her.
"What are you doing here?"
she asked, her voice quiet, and Hades looked at her as she sat back in his seat.
"You don't listen to orders."
She offered a breathy laugh.
"I don't take orders from you, Hades."
They sat close, shoulders and arms and legs touching, heads inclined, sharing breath and heat and space, and he knew he was in trouble because his whole body had gone rigid, including his cock.
"Trust me, darling, I'm aware."
"I'm not yours, and I'm not your darling."
Hades watched her, searching her meadow-green eyes, glassy from alcohol and simmering with oppressed passion. When he spoke, his voice was gruff, heavy with arousal.
"We've been through this, haven't we? You are mine. I think you know that just as well as I do."
She crossed her arms, accentuating her breasts and lifting her chin in challenge.
"Have you ever thought that maybe you're mine instead?"
Her words ignited a fire low in his belly, and the corners of his mouth lifted, eyes falling to her wrist.
"It is my mark upon your skin."
There was a beat of silence, and it burned the air between them. Then she straddled him, her hands on his shoulders, her shapely legs gripping his thighs. Her softness pressed against all his hard edges, and he grit his teeth, fingers curling into fists at his sides. He wanted to touch her, press her closer, feel her harder, but she had been drinking and it did not seem right. A smile curled her lips, and he felt like his eyes were on fire, burning into her soul. She knew what she was doing, teasing him, challenging him.
She leaned close, the tips of her breasts grazing his chest.
"Should I leave a mark?"
she asked, her voice hushed.
"Careful, goddess,"
Hades cautioned. She was playing with darkness, and he would consume her. She rolled her eyes.
"Another order."
"A warning."
The words grated between his teeth. Finally, he could take it no longer. His hands fastened on her bare thighs, and he was rewarded with the sound of Persephone's breath catching in her throat. He tilted his head a little so that their lips were level. Her hands had moved, fingers tangling with his hair at the base of his neck.
"But we both know you don't listen, even when it's good for you."
"You think you know what's good for me?"
Her lips brushed as she spoke.
"You think you know what I need?"
He chuckled, and his hands traveled beneath her dress, seeking her heat. Persephone gasped.
"I don't think, goddess. I know. I could make you worship me."
The air around them felt heavy and charged, potent with their hunger. Hades found it impossible to concentrate on anything but her. Every part of her body that touched his, the smell of vanilla in her hair, the way she bit down on her lush lip as she stared at his own. Then she kissed him, and he opened for her, their tongues sliding together, tasting, exploring, demanding. His hands moved to her back, and he pressed her close, his arousal fitting between her thighs, growing harder as she became more frenzied, fingers coiling into his hair, forcing his head back, kissing him deeper and harder than he had ever imagined. He couldn't help wondering, was this the reaction of a woman who believed he was tense and cold and boorish? When she pulled away, it was his lip between her teeth. She leaned in, her tongue touching his earlobe, then her teeth.
"You will worship me,"
she said, grinding against his cock,
"and I won't even have to order you."
"Oh, darling," he thought, "if you only knew how I worship you now."
His hands dropped to her thighs again, gripping her tight. Something primal was unfurling inside him, and he wanted to know what it would feel to be inside her. He could have her like this, seated in the back of this car. He would take pleasure in the way she moved up and down his shaft, her breasts bouncing as she found release. And despite his vivid imagination and his desperate wish to have her in any and every way, he found himself shifting her so that she was cradled against him and lowering her dress. He managed to shimmy out of his jacket and covered her with it. He had to remove the temptation, or at least restrain it. He would not let her regret him. And yet, as their passion dissolved into an awkward and abrupt silence, he could not shake the feeling that maybe she already did. He glared out the window, though he felt her gaze upon him. After a moment, she spoke, her words heated and whispered,
"You're just afraid."
She was not wrong.
He was afraid that even if by some miracle she decided she did not hate him, the fates would take her from him. It was an all too real possibility, especially after the disaster that was this evening. Sisyphus had slipped through his hands again. When they arrived at Nevernight, Antony helped Persephone out of the cabin of the limo. Hades took over from there, leading her into the club, nodding to Mekonnen as they passed. Before they entered the main part of the club, Hades used his glamour so that they moved unseen across the packed floor, up the stairs, and to his office. He was too nervous to teleport with her at the moment and did not want to make her sick, fearing she had too much to drink. Once they were inside his office, he dropped his glamour and crossed the floor to his bar, pouring her a glass of water. When he looked up, he was struck by her beauty. Why did it hit him differently every time he looked at her? Tonight, she wore teal, and it made her skin look bronzed and her hair look like spun gold. He pushed the glass across the table. "Drink." She approached as he poured himself a drink. As he finished, she swiped it from the table.
"Persephone,"
Hades growled, and she smiled, his glass raised to her lips.
Yes, Hades?
Her voice was husky and made him grip the edge of the table hard. She sipped the whiskey and then turned, strolling across the floor. Her hips swayed, drawing his attention.
I think you should stop drinking, he said.
You are bossy.
I am not bossy. I'm advising.
Isn't someone supposed to ask for your advice before you offer it? She asked as she turned and leaned against his desk.
The same could be said for your opinion. She glared at him.
Why did you bring me here?
Hades came out from behind the bar and approached.
Because I wanted you safe.
He took the glass from her and held her gaze as he downed the remainder before setting it aside.
I don't think I'm safe with you,
she whispered when he looked at her again. Hades did not know what those words meant, but he felt compelled to say,
I would never hurt you.
You don't know that.
They stared at one another before he lifted his hand. Come. He led her toward the wall behind his desk, and he noticed her hesitation in the way she pulled away from his touch.
Why don't we just teleport?
It makes you dizzy, he said, and I'd rather not contribute to that given your state.
Persephone's eyes narrowed and her lips pressed flat.
I'm not in a state.
He sighed inwardly and tugged on her hand, and she followed him through the wall, which was really a portal, or gate, into the underworld. Those who entered here would find themselves in a cavernous entrance called Cape Teneron. There, they would be met by the River Styx, a body of water they would likely not survive. Hades could use this entrance to go anywhere in the underworld as he wished, and when they stepped through, they found themselves in his chambers. He indicated the bed. Rest. When you wake, we will talk. He had questions about Adonis and about her article in New Athens News.
I don't want to rest, she said.
Hades just stared at her.
Ask me what I want, Hades.
He wanted to groan. This was torture, and worse, he indulged her. What do you want?
To finish what we started in the limo.
It was significant to him that she had not responded with you, and only solidified his wish to ensure they go no further than they had.
No, Persephone.
She scowled.
You want me?
He said nothing. He could not deny it and would not admit it. She pushed away from him and walked toward the bed, slipping the straps of her dress off her shoulders.
Persephone.
What?
She turned toward him, and her dress fell in a puddle at her feet. She stood bare before him, all golden skin and glorious curves.
Tell me you don't want me.
He swallowed hard, clenching his hands at his sides. So many emotions swirled inside him. A carnal need to claim her and protect her. He could not do both. He reached for the robe she had worn the last time she was here. It hung in the same place, on the screen behind where she'd changed. He held it out so that she could slip her arms inside. Get dressed, Persephone. She glared at him and snatched the robe from his hands, but she did not put it on. Instead, she stared at him.
You didn't answer my question.
He hadn't, because if he said he did not want her, that would be a lie, and admitting it would be inviting her to his bed. She touched him, her hands sliding down his arms, pausing at his fists.
Let's go,
she coaxed, stepping into him and placing his hands on her hips, his fingers splayed, digging into her skin. Was this some sort of trial? Had this woman been sent to test his control? He studied her hard, expecting her to vanish into smoke, but she did not. She remained there, solid and warm and soft beneath him. Her hands twined behind his neck, her bare breasts pressed against his chest.
Hades?
She whispered his name, breath caressing his lips.
Hold me.
Her mouth closed over his, and his arms tightened around her waist. He drew her against him tight, one hand breaking free to glide up her back to the nape of her neck, where he held her head, lips pressing hard against hers, urging her mouth open wide, tasting and taking. Persephone's hands moved from around his neck, down his chest, to his crotch. She grasped his cock through the fabric of his slacks, and he groaned, tearing free from her mouth.
"Persephone,
I want to touch you," she said, and suddenly Hades found himself being guided back toward his bed. She pushed him, guiding him to lie flat on the silken sheets, and as she climbed on top of him, straddling him, naked and rosy and beautiful, he thought he might come then. She leaned over him, her hot and soft center rocking against his hard length, the tips of her breasts barely touching his chest.
"Let me please you,"
she whispered, and kissed him again. His hands landed on her sides, and he rolled, pinning her beneath him. He took her wrists and guided them over her head.
"You please me,"
he said, kissing her swollen lips a final time, reveling in the way her body arched against his, warmed with need. It was a reminder of why he had to stop this.
"Sleep."
The command came with a rush of magic that instantly sent Persephone into a deep slumber. Hades paused there a moment, suspended over her, before rolling off onto his back. He sighed, full of frustration and rage, and growled,
"Fucking fates."
Chapter 17. Breaking Point. Hades watched Persephone sleep while he tried to reconcile the contradiction of her words and actions. He reminded himself that she had been under the influence, not just of alcohol, but of some sort of drug. He had tasted it upon her tongue, metallic, salty, wrong. She had not been herself, not in the limo or his office or his bedroom, which meant her words, the ones she'd written in her article, won his thoughts, and he turned them over and over again in his head until he seethed. He sensed when she woke because her breathing changed. She bolted upright, holding his silk sheets to her chest, eyes bright and cheeks flushed. He would have liked to see her this way after a night of lovemaking. Instead, he was watching her after a night of rejecting her drunken advances. He took a sip from his glass, holding her gaze, bright eyes trained on him, wary. "Why am I naked?" she asked.
"Because you insisted on it," he said,
keeping his voice as devoid of emotion as possible. It took effort because every other thought was a remembrance from last night, a memory of her desperation to hear him say he wanted her, the phantom press of her body against his, the heat of her lips urging his apart.
"You were very determined to seduce me."
Her already flushed cheeks turned crimson.
"Did we?"
His laugh sounded more like a bark. He wasn't sure what he was reacting to. Maybe it was the fact that she would assume he would take advantage of her in her inebriated state, or that he had spent the better part of her slumber agonizing over the words she'd used to describe him.
"No, Lady Persephone. Trust me. When we fuck, you'll remember."
Her features hardened, and her lips pressed into a thin line.
"Your arrogance is alarming."
"Is that a challenge?"
"Just tell me what happened, Hades," she snapped.
He met her ferocious stare with just as much venom before answering.
"You were drugged at La Rose. You're lucky you are immortal. Your body burned through the poison fast."
She was quiet for a moment, processing the information he had shared. Her gaze left his, as if searching the middle distance for answers to her questions.
"Adonis," she said suddenly, eyes narrowing in accusation. "What did you do to him?"
Hades ground his teeth and focused on the remaining liquor in his glass rather than her gaze. He downed the last bit before setting it aside.
"He is alive, but that is only because he was in his goddess's territory."
"You knew?"
She pushed off the bed, the sheets rustling around her. He wanted to take them from her, challenge her to stand bare and confident before him as she had last night.
Is that why you warned me to stay away from him?
I assure you, there are more reasons to stay away from that mortal than the favor Aphrodite has bestowed upon him.
Like what? She asked, taking a step toward him. You can't expect me to understand if you don't explain anything.
What need have I to explain? He kissed you when you did not want him to, Hades wanted to say, but it was possible she did not remember. I expect that you will trust me, he stood, swiping his glass off the table and refilling it at the bar. And if not me, then my power. He was more than aware she knew of his ability to see what mortals tried to hide with charms and lies. It was a power she condemned in her article, claiming he used it to prey upon their darkest secrets.
I thought you were jealous.
The laugh that ruptured from the back of Hades' throat sounded harsh, even to his ears. He was not sure why he mocked her either, but maybe it was because he just now realized his jealousy, now that he was beyond the anger and the challenge last night had posed to his sense of control.
Don't pretend you don't get jealous, Hades. Adonis kissed me last night.
Hades slammed his glass on the table, betraying himself, and twisted toward her. Keep reminding me, goddess, and I'll reduce him to ash.
So you are jealous, she cried.
Jealous? He hissed, stalking toward her. He watched as the excitement of her triumph melted from her face, replaced by an expression he could not discern. He only knew it was not fear. That leech touched you after you told him not to. I have sent souls to Tartarus for less. He paused a few inches from her, his anger acute, radiating off him like the heat from Helios's sun, until she uttered an apology. The words fell from her mouth, quiet and breathy.
I'm sorry.
He was not sure why she was apologizing, but those words seemed misplaced on the heels of his speech about Adonis. His brows knitted together, and he cupped her face, stepping closer, sealing the space between them. Don't you dare apologize. Not for him. Never for him. She covered his hands with her own, and as he searched her eyes, full of kindness and compassion, he felt a little of that fury dissipate and couldn't help asking, Why are you so desperate to hate me?
I don't hate you,
she said quietly. He could not sense the lie, but he could not reconcile why she would write that article about him, not when she did not hate him. He tore away from her. No? Shall I remind you? Hades, lord of the underworld, rich one, and arguably the most hated god among mortals, exhibits a clear disregard for mortal life. As he spoke, she seemed to cower, shoulders rising, growing smaller and smaller beneath his own vicious words. This is what you think of me? He challenged.
I was angry.
Oh, that is more than obvious, he barked.
I didn't know they would publish it.
A scathing letter illustrating all my faults? He paused to laugh bitterly. You didn't think the media would publish it? She had used the article as a threat, knowing Hades valued his privacy. She was well aware that it would be a coveted piece to the media, and yet there was something troubling about her defense. And that was that he sensed no lie. Still, if she truly meant for it not to go live, why did she write it? And how had it gotten published? His sarcasm did not win him any compassion from the goddess. Her eyes flashed, and her words slipped from between barred teeth.
I warned you.
You warned me? Hades raised his brows and offered a breathy laugh. You warned me about what, goddess?
I warned you that you would regret our contract.
They were words he remembered, spoken as she had straightened the lapels of his jacket and killed the flower in his breast pocket. He had no doubt then, and he had no doubt now. And I warned you not to write about me, He dared to close the distance between them again, knowing it was the wrong thing to do, knowing that their anger only had one outlet. "Perhaps in my next article I'll write about how bossy you are," she threatened.
"Next article?"
"You didn't know?" she asked smugly. "I've been asked to write a series on you."
"No."
"You can't say no. You're not in control here."
He would show her control, he thought, bending into her body, feeling the way she arched with him. She was a viper, responding to his call, and when she struck, it would be venomous. "And you think you are?"
"I'll write the articles, Hades, and the only way I'll stop is if you let me out of this goddamned contract."
So that was her game? "You think to bargain with me, goddess?" he asked. "You've forgotten one important thing, Lady Persephone. To bargain, you need to have something I want."
Her eyes sparked and her cheeks turned rosy again. "You asked me if I believed what I wrote," she argued. "You care."
"It's called a bluff, darling."
"Bastard," she hissed.
It was the word that broke his restraint. He dragged her against him, burying his hand in her hair, and his lips closed over hers. She was soft and sweet, and she smelled like him. He wanted all of her, and yet he pulled away, separating by mere inches. "Let me be clear," he said fiercely. "You bargained, and you lost. There is no way out of your contract unless you fulfill its terms, unless you remain here, with me."
She stared up at him, eyes raging, lips raw. "If you make me your prisoner, I will spend the rest of my life hating you."
"You already do."
He noted how she seemed to recoil at his words, staring up at him as if his comment hurt. "Do you really believe that?" He did not answer, just offered a mocking laugh, and then pressed a hot kiss to her mouth before tearing away viciously.
"I will erase the memory of him from your skin."
He yanked the sheet from her hands, and she was naked before him, as she was last night, her eyes full of desire, and all he could think was that he fucking wanted this, her passion and her body and her soul. He grasped her bottom, lifting her from the ground, and her body molded to his without his guidance. It was silent surrender, a sign that she wanted this just as much as he did. His lips crushed hers, and heat blossomed low in his belly, filling his groin until he was hard and desperate to be inside her. He felt frantic, and his body vibrated with need, urged by Persephone's vicious hands, scraping his scalp, yanking on his hair. He growled low in his throat, pressing her into the bedpost, grinding his length into her softness. He reveled in the way her mouth broke from his so that she could gasp for breath as he moved against her, pressing kisses down her neck and shoulder, tongue tasting. He was senseless, and she was a spell, a contract he would fulfill endlessly if it meant having her like this every day for the rest of his life. "My lover," he thought, "my wife, my queen." He froze, almost saying those words aloud, and then shifted, dropping her on the bed. He stood over her, breathing hard, and she looked up at him, surprised, but as beautiful and as sensual as ever, legs parted, breasts firm and full. He had two choices before him. He could take her or leave her. And on the heels of her article, he felt it was best to leave, because the only thing that would wait for them on the other side of this was sorrow. After a moment, he managed a savage smile.
"Well, you would probably enjoy fucking me, but you definitely don't like me."
He barely registered the horror on her face before he vanished. She was right. He was a bastard.
Chapter 18. The Three Moons. Hades stood outside an occult shop known as the Three Moons. It was where Hecate had traced the scent of magic used at Poseidon's shipyard. Beside him was Hecate, who looked like a member of a cult, dressed in a black silken cloak and hood. They were both gazing at the imagery on the shop window, a full moon framed by two half-moons. It was Hecate's symbol, and it had multiple meanings, none of which were represented by the man who ran the shop, Vasilis Remis, a magi. Magi were mortals who tended to practice black magic, and poorly, often creating chaos Hecate had to quell. "Tell me you have brought me here to curse this mortal," Hecate said, hopeful, glancing at Hades. Hades' lips quirked. "Only if you are very good." He stepped past her and entered the shop. As he did, a bell sounded overhead, and a voice snapped from somewhere in the dark.
"Be with you in a minute."
Hades and Hecate exchanged a look.
"Excellent customer service," she commented,
and began to explore the shop, wrinkling her nose as she went.
"This place stinks of dark magic."
Hades could smell it too. It reeked of burnt flesh and something metallic. The shop was dark. The large window bearing Hecate's symbol had been covered with dark paint. The only light source came from black candles, all varying heights. Hades did not know much about witchcraft, but he knew those candles were typically used for protection, which made him wonder exactly what Vasilis Remis needed protecting from, well, other than them. Then again, perhaps the magi kept the shop dark to hide the chaos. It was a wreck, crowded with cases of stones and crystals of all shapes and sizes, books that were unorganized and shoved into every open nook. There were hexing poppets and athames, vials of oils and dust, and
dove's blood, Hecate said.
Hades looked at the goddess, who had been across the room moments ago. They had a competition going for a few years. The first to sneak up on the other wins, the prize to be claimed on the day of victory. He raised a brow. "I know you were trying to scare me."
"Did it work?"
she asked. Hades leaned in a little more, offering a deliberate no, before turning back to the line of vials, nodding toward the one with the red-black blood.
"What is it used for?"
"Mostly love spells," she replied. Hades should have guessed. The dove was Aphrodite's symbol, and love her wheelhouse. This was an example of why magi were so dangerous. They attempted to obtain the power of the gods, usually for nefarious purposes and disastrous implications.
"It is also used to seal pacts and promises," she said. "Too bad they cannot extract favors."
Hades agreed, when he noticed Hecate stiffen. Something had caught her attention.
"What is it?"
The goddess crossed the room, approaching the clerk's counter. Hades followed, curious at first, and then horrified by what he saw. A set of shelves were mounted upon the wall behind the counter, and, displayed like prized possessions, were a set of shriveled hands. Each one had a candle clutched between their fingers.
"Hecate," Hades said her name quietly. "What are those?"
"Hands of glory," she said. "Traditionally, they are the hands of hanging victims."
The two exchanged a look. People were no longer hanged in New Greece. If Hades had to guess, those hands came from graves.
"It is said that those in possession of one may render anyone else immobile."
It was a blasphemous weapon that could do a lot of harm if given to the wrong person. Just then, a rotund man stumbled from a shrouded doorway behind the clerk's counter. He did not look in their direction as he rubbed his palms over his black robes, which Hades found unsettling.
"Can I help you?"
His voice was a high-pitched whine, and Hades had the thought that he would be annoying to torture.
"You can start by telling us where Sisyphus de Ephyra is hiding," Hades said.
The magi's head snapped toward them, small eyes widening in his chubby, sallow face. He stumbled clumsily and fell over something hidden in the shadows behind his desk. After a moment, he popped back up, struggling to reach one of the hands shelved on the wall.
When he finally swiped it from its place, he held it aloft, shaking.
"Stay back."
Hades and Hecate exchanged a look.
"I possess the power of the gods."
His voice wavered and he spit as he spoke.
"Pagoma!"
There was silence for a moment as the Magi realized he was not at all as powerful as the two gods in front of him.
"Oh, precious mortal," Hecate said, and the sweet tone of her voice contradicted her narrowing eyes.
The shriveled hand he held aloft disintegrated. Then the others on his shelf followed.
"You would threaten me when it is my symbol you bear upon your shop?"
Hecate's voice changed in that moment, taking on a distorted edge, and Vasilis cowered, shrinking against the wall and shaking. It was not often Hades got to witness Hecate's wrath, and he had to say he enjoyed seeing the fire in her eyes.
"You will never know the power of the gods."
The air stirred with Hecate's magic, extinguishing the flaming candles. And while Hades would have liked to see the goddess's rage climax, he also needed the Magi alive and able to talk.
"Are you finished scaring the mortal?" Hades asked.
"Wait your turn," she said.
"It is my turn."
Hades gave her a meaningful look that said, "Remember why we came here."
"If you are arguing over my impending punishment," the Magi said, "then I'd really rather stick with Lady Hecate."
"You don't get to choose who punishes you, mortal," Hades snapped. "You have a lot of nerve threatening gods, not to mention this blasphemous business you run."
"I panicked," he said.
Hades' lips flattened.
"Sisyphus de Ephra, where is he?"
Hades saw recognition in the mortal's eyes.
"Tell me," Hades commanded.
"Sisyphus de Ephra, you say?"
Vasilis stuttered.
No, I think you are mistaken, my lord. I don't know anyone by that name."
Hades hated lies. They had a taste and a scent, bitter and pungent. His brows slammed down over his eyes, and as he advanced upon the Magi, he changed his tune.
"I mean, did you say Sisyphus de Ephra? I thought you said Sisyphus de Phira," he continued, his laugh awkward while sliding along the wall away from the gods. "Yes, yes. Sisyphus was here just yesterday."
There was a beat of silence, and then Hades spoke, words slipping between his teeth.
"Where is he now?"
I don't know."
Hades' patience was a thin thread, and it snapped. He snapped. Claws protruded from the tips of his fingers. As he stepped toward the man, there was a crashing sound that came from the back room where the mortal had been. Hades glared at the mortal before changing course and making his way toward the back room.
"Wait!
Are you asking for Hades, god of the underworld, to slice your face to bits?" Hecate asked. "Because I will gladly watch."
"You're looking for Sisyphus? I'll tell you where he is. Come, come back,"
he called as Hades disappeared behind the curtain. He found himself in a dark hallway that emptied into a larger room. The air was cold and stale, smelling faintly of decay, wax, and something akin to burnt hair. It was cleaner than the storefront and full of sleek glass cases, under which were a variety of carefully displayed items. It was clear why Vasilis had not wanted Hades to venture here. He was selling relics, tattered fabrics and bits of jewelry, shattered spear tips and slivers of shields, bones and broken pottery. These were things that had been scavenged from the battlefields after the Great War. He wasn't sure why, but seeing the remnants of war was never easy for him. It reminded him of the trauma of Titanomachy, of bloody battlefields and broken corpses. Still, Hades searched the darkness for the source of the noise and found it. A set of books had been knocked from a shelf. Hades bent to pick them up, and as he straightened, his gaze met that of a black cat with yellow eyes. The creature hissed at him, and he hissed back.
The cat yowled and hopped from its place, disappearing into the darkness.
"We have ourselves a black market dealer," Hades called to Hecate.
Vasilis shuffled into the room first, his hand stretched into the air as if he were surrendering. It was then Hades noticed a familiar image etched on the pale skin of his wrist, a triangle. Hades' eyes narrowed.
"So, you are a member of Triad?"
The Magi froze.
"Not by choice."
It was the fastest answer he had given, and it rang of truth.
"Then why is there mark upon your skin?"
The question left Hades feeling uneasy. He could not help thinking of Persephone and the mark upon her wrist, the one he had placed there against her will.
"What did they do?"
It was Hecate who asked the question, her tone gentle, seeing something within the mortal Hades had not, apparently.
"They burned her,"
Vasilis replied, lowering his hands.
"Who?" Hades asked.
"My cat."
"Your cat?" Hades was not impressed.
"They burned her right in front of me," he said, his voice thick with emotion. "I thought she was gone forever. But their leader, he kept her collar. He said he would return it if I joined them. They needed magic."
"A golem?" Hades asked.
Vasilis nodded. Hades understood now. The Magi had agreed to serve Triad in exchange for the collar. It was the only item left that belonged to his cat, but he had wanted it because he was sentimental. He'd wanted it for a purpose. The collar could be used to resurrect her, which, by the looks of it, had been successful.
"So you traded your freedom for a collar?"
"What would you trade for something you love?"
the Magi countered.
"The world," Hades thought.
"Oh!"
Hecate exclaimed suddenly, bending to scoop up the cat that had hissed at Hades earlier.
"Is this her? What a sweet baby! What is her name?"
"Says Serena."
"Serena," Hecate said, lifting the cat as she would a child. "I have a polecat named Gale—"
Hades sighed.
"Hecate, can you not?"
"This is being human, Hades," the goddess said. "You should be taking notes. Don't you want to impress Persephone?"
"Who is Persephone?"
the Magi asked.
"Not your concern," Hades snapped.
Then he glared at Hecate and hated himself for his next question.
"What does a cat have to do with being human?"
"It has everything to do with the cat," Hecate said.
Then she sighed.
"The cat is humanity. It's what makes this," she gestured toward the Magi, "unfortunate, sad, and pitiful mortal worth saving."
"You haven't seen his soul," Hades muttered.
Hecate glared. "I am teaching you a lesson, Hades. Learn it." Hades was about to snap that she was a horrible teacher, when he felt the air shift behind him. He turned, and shadows split from his essence, racing toward the retreating form of the Magi, who was attempting to escape down the hall. The shadows enveloped him and sent him flying backward. The Magi crashed into one of his immaculate glass displays and was still. Hecate grimaced.
"You didn't have to throw him so hard. He isn't a god."
"He wanted to act like one."
Hecate arched a brow. "Is that the response of a compassionate god?"
"Is that what you were trying to teach?"
Hades took a step toward the mortal and waved his hand. The Magi opened his eyes, blinking, and then groaned as the pain from his landing set in.
"Listen here, mortal, and listen well. You will tell me who requested your services, or I will spend eternity cutting out your tongue and feeding it to your cat. Do you understand?"
The man nodded, breathing hard, and answered,
"His name is Theseus."
Theseus.
It was a name Hades knew well, as it was the name of Poseidon's son, his nephew.
"The golem was Sisyphus's idea," Vasilis explained. "He was a client of mine. It was after he came to visit that Theseus arrived, demanding to know Sisyphus's plans. He made me summon a portal to the warehouse. He left from here with Sisyphus. I don't know where they went.
So Sisyphus had been deceived just as much as Hades had. The question was, what did Theseus want with Sisyphus? Had he sought revenge for the murder of Aeolus Galani, or was there something more to his actions? After a moment, the Magi spoke.
Please, please don't take my cat.
Hecate. Hades called to the goddess, who had made her way toward the dark hallway with the cat still in her arms. Bring the cat.
Wait, I said please.
Oh, you're coming too, mortal, he said, and Vasilis's eyes grew wide.
But I told you the truth.
The Magi was silenced, vanishing with a wave of Hades' hand. He would spend time imprisoned, but not in Tartarus. He would go to a phantom site, a prison that could only be seen by those who were favored. It was a special place for mortals like him, magi who broke the law or held secrets, and on rare occasions might be used as bait. Hades turned to Hecate. See, I can be compassionate. Before leaving the Three Moons, Hades summoned Ilias to the shop so the satyr could dispose of the contents, which meant burning it to the ground. He and Hecate parted. Hades had business with Aphrodite, while Hecate intended to return to the underworld. The souls are celebrating you tonight, she reminded him. They would be overjoyed to see you. Guilt slammed into him, as it always did when his people set aside time to worship him. Persephone will be there. I believe they plan to honor her as well. That was not unexpected. She deserved their worship. She was more of a god than he had ever been to them. Besides, they would have to get used to celebrating her. She was to be their queen. Perhaps I will make it this time, he said, before departing, but doubted his words. The goddess of witchcraft meant well, but there were some demons Hades did not wish to face, and his people, his past treatment of them, was one. Hades found Aphrodite at her seaside mansion, reclining on a plush chaise in her marbled home, floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking the ocean and Hephaestus's island. When he appeared, she yawned, placing the back of her hand over her mouth. I expected you to return last night, she said, fanning herself with what looked like a bundle of feathers. You must have had quite the distraction on your hands. Your mortal drugged Persephone, Hades said, getting to the point of his visit. He did not normally mind Aphrodite's badgering, but he was not in the mood for it today. The goddess did not react, but her hand continued to move, the feathered fan beating in a steady rhythm. Where is your proof? She asked, bored. I tasted the poison on her tongue, Aphrodite, Hades said tightly. Tasted? Aphrodite sat up, eyes widened slightly as she set her fan aside. So you kissed her then? Hades' jaw tightened, and he did not respond. Are you in love? She asked, and there was a note of alarm in her voice Hades did not understand. Did Aphrodite fear that he would win their bargain and she would lose her chance to see Basil returned from the underworld? Or did she even care about Basil? Did she fear more that she would no longer see him as she saw herself, alone? He glared at her, and her eyes sparkled, a smile curling her lips. You are. Oh, this is news indeed. Enough, Aphrodite. She glared, folding her arms over her chest. I suppose you have come here to threaten Adonis? I have come to ask why you let it happen. Aphrodite's eyes widened, and she blinked, clearly not expecting Hades to ask that question. Then her eyes narrowed. What are you accusing me of, Hades? You keep your lovers on a short leash, and yet you let Adonis go and summoned me when things got out of hand. Were you hoping to see me rage? I think you are accusing me of setting up last night's debacle. Aphrodite might be the goddess of love, but she did not believe in it, and often made obtaining it difficult for mortals.
She saw it as a game and played them like pawns, introducing distractions, challenging the bond she could never establish with another. He knew what she was doing, and he was here to stop it.
Persephone is not a plaything, Aphrodite. You do not get to fuck with this.
Her lips thinned, and her sea-green eyes darkened.
There are no rules to the bargain, Hades. I can challenge your choice as much as I wish.
Let me be clear, Aphrodite. This bargain has no bearing on whether or not Persephone will be my queen, as that is a future woven by the fates. If you fuck with her, you fuck with me.
If she does not love you, you cannot prevent her eye from wandering.
Is that what you were attempting to prove last night? Because all I saw was my future wife in distress, a crime that will not go unpunished.
Unless?
Her question made Hades chuckle, and the sound stole Aphrodite's smug expression. Oh, there is no bargaining when it comes to my queen, Hades replied. Adonis's existence in the underworld will be horror. As he spoke, the goddess of love's eyes widened, and anger clouded her face.
Hades!
His name slipped from between her lips like a warning. Nothing will keep me from shredding Adonis's soul. Rest well in the knowledge that you have decided his fate, Aphrodite. The last thing he heard before he left was Aphrodite screaming his name. Hades returned to his office in the underworld. It overlooked Asphodel, and he watched his people's merrymaking from afar, illuminated by lantern light. From this distance, he could not see Persephone, but he knew she was here. Her presence unearthed more memories from the previous night, and along with it, the guilt of leaving her on his bed, naked, skin flushed with desire. At least he had proven one thing to himself. She wanted him sober. He sighed and downed a glass of whiskey before loosening his tie and heading for the baths. He needed a shower. He felt unclean, the stench of dark magic and Vasilis's shop clinging to his skin. He paused at the entry to his private baths where he could hear the splash of water and smell Persephone's scent. The thought of seeing her naked again filled him with lust, his cock thickening at the thought of being inside her. But would she reject him, or invite him to explore every facet of her body? He was about to find out. He stepped out of the shadow, making his way down the steps, ensuring he made enough noise so that he would not startle her. When he came into view, he found her at the center of the oval pool, flanked on either side by marble columns. Her eyes were wide, her cheeks flushed, her hair was wet and suctioned to her body like vines curling around porcelain. The water lapped at her breasts, coming just to her rosy nipples, and it was so clear he could make out the curve of her hips and the dark curls at the apex of her thighs. His thoughts turned to how it would feel to part that satin flesh and explore the evidence of her desire for him. He was sure she would be slick and hot, ready for his fingers and his mouth, and he would drink from her until she came apart in his arms. Then his eyes fell to his feet, where her clothes were piled. On top sat a beautiful gold crown. He recognized the craftsmanship as Ian Kovacs, a talented blacksmith who had resided in the underworld for centuries. Hades bent and picked it up for a closer examination. It was a beautiful gem and floral crown, a perfect balance of flora that represented him and Persephone alike.
This is beautiful.
She stared, her eyes burning like a forge. Hades wondered what thoughts accompanied that gaze. Were they just as salacious as his own? Was she wondering what his cock would feel like in her hands, how he would taste in her mouth, the sound he would make as he came? She cleared her throat, breaking his thoughts.
It is. Ian made it for me.
He is a talented craftsman. It is what led to his death. Her brows drew together over her forehead.
What do you mean?
He was favored by Artemis, and she blessed him with the ability to create weapons that ensured their wearer could not be defeated in battle.
he was killed for it. Favor could be a dangerous thing to bestow. It made targets of mortals in antiquity and today. Sometimes the results were positive, and the receiver was granted celebrity and status. Then other times, they were killed. Hades stared at the crown a moment longer. It was significant that she had accepted such an ornament from his people, even if she had done so to please them. It was a sign of her dedication to them, a quality in a true queen. He set it down atop her clothes and then rose to his feet, meeting Persephone's gaze again. It was also significant that she had not moved to hide herself from him.
"Why didn't you go?" she asked. "To the celebration in Asphodel. It was for you."
"And you. They celebrated you," he said, "as they should."
"I am not their queen."
"And I am not worthy of their celebration."
"If they feel you're worthy of celebration, don't you think that's enough?"
Hades did not respond. He did not wish to speak on this topic. In fact, the only words he wanted to share with her were erotic pleas and breathy moans. His cock throbbed, desperate for freedom and pleasure, which made his blood rush to his head and kept him from focusing on anything but sex. "May I join you?" He noted the way her throat constricted as she swallowed, nodding. Her invitation only encouraged the fire. He held her gaze as he stripped, almost groaning as he freed his jutting sex from the confines of his trousers. It felt swollen and taut to the point of pain. He needed release, and he was even more desperate for it as Persephone's gaze traveled the length of his body, just as hungry as he felt. He stepped into the pool and spoke as he approached. "I believe I owe you an apology."
"For what, specifically?"
A smile touched his lips. He was aware she felt he owed her an apology for more than just the way he had left her yesterday. The problem was, an apology was offered when someone truly felt sorry for what they had done, and Hades didn't think he'd ever be sorry for tricking her into their contract. It would